Hey, everybody. Welcome to Reality TV Wrap-Ups for this third episode of Season 6 of The Amazing Race Canada. And my name is Jessica Leese, and I'm about to open my pie hole and give you all of my thoughts on this interesting leg in various British Columbia locales. With me, as always, is the man that I would definitely want with me if I were dodging a train on a railway bridge, Mr. Dan Heaton.
Yes, right now I'm going to use my express pass to keep you from opening up that pie hole and saying anything, because that was very common. A lot happened this week, though, Jess. It was a packed leg of things happening, which tends to be the case, but I felt like it was a little like exhausting by the end. It was a lot going on.
I thought it was kind of lowercase t things.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, I mean, it wasn't anything that shocked me. I did not gasp when anything happened. I mean, really, you were kind of putting a team, I hate to say it, out of their misery a bit this week. But there was a lot of movement in terms of things being played and you know, elements like that, at least. You know, there was a lot of tasks, I will say that.
Yeah, there always are on Amazing Race Canada, and I guess we have to give them proper credit for that. But really, it felt to me like the whole time I was watching this episode, I was just thinking about, there used to be a recurring thread on Reddit where people would post the question, can you describe your favorite movie in a way that makes it sound as boring as possible? And people would respond with things like, a guy inherits some jewelry from his uncle and takes it back to the manufacturer because he doesn't like it. And this is the description for Lord of the Rings. Or a bunch of people take a nap on an airplane is the description for Inception. And I'm looking at this episode and it's like, a bunch of people eat some pie and drive a car and tie some knots and look for a door.
Well, that is the description of the episode, I will say. I mean, with the exception of Team Dan's continued demise, I thought it was okay. I mean, again, it's funny where I watched this several days ago, and I will admit that unlike the premiere, especially where I remembered it very clearly after a day or two, this one, I remember it, but not as clearly. I had to kind of go, okay. I remember the pie. There's obviously some fun moments there, but I also think too, that part of me, they do this on The Amazing Race so much, but I just don't find people driving in cars very exciting. So that was a big chunk of it. So that might be part of it. We'll get to it. But I guess the top story is, unfortunately, Joseph and Akash did not maintain their first place lead when they were rejected at the ferry and then unfortunately were eliminated. It's a sad day. Super fan Joseph and his partner never could get above eighth place. So I guess that's part of your feeling too, is that because the elimination was kind of expected in a way, it does eliminate a bit of the drama.
Yeah, they felt like dead men walking for most of this episode. And even though it seemed like they made a pretty good effort, they performed okay on the tasks. It's just like, I don't even know if you can point to one thing these guys did that spelled their doom. They just kind of started at the back of the pack. And despite that shining moment where it looked like they were starting to figure things out, they mostly stayed at the back of the pack for the duration of their tenure on the race.
Yeah, I mean, they did have their amazing solo seaplane ride where they were alone in first place, currently in first place, as the card said. But this was an interesting leg because you don't see this a lot on The Amazing Race Canada. I mean, I guess because this, you know, early on they started even, then they took the flight to Vancouver. But there was I don't know if it was planned or not, but an equalization point in the middle of the leg, which ended up really helping some teams, but hurt them because they had gained an edge. And I know they were still top five when they got to the roadblock, but it was really close, where some of the teams near the top might have had a huge edge, especially if they had gone out on that ferry an hour ahead. Maybe Akash could have figured out the knot with that lead.
Maybe they could have. But I think we have to talk about, before we even get into the tasks, I want to talk about the overall design of this leg, because I thought it was nothing short of ridiculous to take a seaplane all the way out to an island for basically one and a half tasks. and then hop on the ferry and go right back onto the mainland, or, you know, the slightly larger island, as the case may be. It just seemed like a lot of fanfare to spend very little time in one place. And I don't feel like I got to know the location at all. This just felt like a place with some pretty woods. And that's a little disappointing. A nice place with pretty woods that has a farmer's market. Again, if we're going for describe something in as boring terms as possible. Is that what Salt Spring Island is? There's got to be something better to it if all these rock stars have houses there.
Yeah, I mean, I heard it had a real hippie feel. I was expecting a lot of that. And you're right, though. And actually, that's kind of, I mean, the Yukon was neat to go to last week. But in general, we started, you know, in Victoria. We kind of circled around there. Then we went to the Yukon. Then we come back. And now we did another circle around British Columbia, which I think they wanted to stay on the West Coast, given what they're going to do next week. But it did seem like this episode in particular was kind of like, you know, you have this sometimes more on the US version where they have a leg where they either stay in the same place or they go to a suburb or something where they're just kind of like getting to the next destination. That's just going to be a flight. And a little bit, I mean, I didn't think about it much while watching it, but when you say that, I do get a little sense that while this episode had some fun moments, that as far as the travel side or the leg design, it did seem like they realized we want to go to Indonesia on leg four. So let's keep them kind of over here for the third leg.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the equivalent of Amazing Race US having a leg in Amsterdam. Do you guys ever wonder why they go to Amsterdam so much? It's got nothing to do with Amsterdam being a beautiful city, which it is. It's all right. But the reason they do it is because it's an airport hub and it gets people to the next thing. And that's exactly what was going on here. But for all of that, you could still make it interesting. There's got to be more going on up there than what we saw. And I think, you know, Dylan told us everyone up on Salt Spring Island has moss on their roofs. We didn't see anybody's house. How do I know that? So show us something, like give us a little something else without sticking that ferry ride in the middle of the leg, which had the potential to really screw a team if they didn't know that was coming up and they were in last place and they end up being the only team on the ferry. That ends up being a super boring leg in addition to feeling like kind of a kick in the gut to somebody.
Yeah, and it could have happened. I mean, Nancy and Melissa, because, you know, they were on the last seaplane, and so they were behind at the market. Melissa struggled with the pies, and then they used their express pass, and I know I'm jumping ahead, but if they hadn't, I mean, who knows how long the ferry doors were taken or how far they were behind. There's a chance there they missed that ferry. And given where they finished eventually, that would have been it. And that would have been too bad because, you know, I think they still have a potential, despite this week, to be a pretty strong team. They could have been gone and it would have been dull. So at least we did get to a situation where the show kind of lucked out a bit, where it ended up being where you had the roadblock at the end, the second roadblock, where most of the teams were still there.
Yeah. And I mean, if we lost them, Team Dan would really be struggling right about now.
Oh, come on. You know, I'm just waiting. I still think Adam and Courtney have a chance. The others, oh my.
Yeah.
Oh my.
I guess it's only okay if you talk about how bad your team is.
No, it's totally fine. It is bad. Just to briefly touch on that, when I look at the leaderboard, normally I have a team up there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Just. It's like, and you know, I was so close to picking Todd and Anna, but even so, I guess I'm just going to have to win at the kiss count. That's all I'm saying. I think that's the real prize, you know, as it goes. But I guess, should we dive into the episode itself and how it went?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we start off in the farmer's market, and we have a task that, this seemed to me like my first thought in my notes, all I have in all lowercase letters, eat two entire pies. What a hardship.
Which is funny because it was, you know, I looked at it like, oh, well, that, you know, maybe one team will have a problem. But in general, I mean, yes, eating a full pie is a lot, but you figure they got to be hungry. I mean, unless all of them like ate a full course breakfast at the hotel before they left Dawson City, maybe they did. The show was kind of doing this, but this ended up being like, you know, this is like bringing out the puke buckets and everything. This is not what I anticipated when I saw that.
This is kind of a throwback to classic Amazing Race, because I feel like this is something that they used to do all the time on Amazing Race US back in the day. And it was kind of like, they would do it just because it was the kind of eating challenge you could never do on Survivor. Survivor has, of course, the classic gross food challenge, but Amazing Race was like, you know, something that's almost as entertaining as watching somebody try to eat something really, really gross is to have somebody eat something that's kind of gross, but have to eat a whole lot of it. And so you got classic things like having to eat 2 pounds of caviar or a quart of really spicy Hungarian soup, which, by the by, is my all-time favorite episode of The Amazing Race ever. I just loved it. Like, they've used the one where you have to scramble an entire ostrich egg more than once. And I just love watching people have to put away a giant amount of food and just sort of waddle their way through the rest of the leg. It's something that's very unique to Amazing Race and something they don't do as much of anymore. I think the last time we saw like one of these great quantity food challenges on Amazing Race US was several seasons ago. I think it was the frog fallopian tubes. That's what it was. It was the 20s had to eat it.
Yeah. And even so, when I think about the gross food, like super volume challenges, they come from seasons 5, 6, 7 of the US, and the meat block, of course, being the last one you hadn't mentioned yet, which I just thought of. And so that was that stretch. And you're right, because a lot of times we have seen something where it's like, eat this or like sip this tea or eat this sushi. But if you're good at it, you don't have to eat the huge volume. The only time you end up eating a lot is when you're bad at the task, you know, like a loop kind of thing where you can't figure out the right tea or something, I think it was. But in this case, there's no skill or no way around it. Well, there's one way around it, but in general, there's not a way around it. So it just comes down to, and you have teams, obviously, this does benefit people. I'm not just talking about who are larger or smaller. But there are some people who obviously enjoy eating, and some of them are really big athletes, which actually is because they have to eat more calories, but who kind of really took to this, and then others who looked at it like, this is the hardest thing I'll do ever.
Yeah, and I cannot figure out, like, for the life of me, this is the kind of thing where the couch warriors of the world who sit at home and say, you know, I want to be on The Amazing Race, despite having no real measurable skill. Like, this is the kind of thing even they should be like, I could eat a whole pie. Like, right now, Dan, I already had dinner. I could eat a whole pie. I don't really understand why people had so much trouble with this.
Yeah, I wonder if it was just like, you know, you saw Joseph take his first bite and be like, oh, I need a drink, I need water, which was pretty funny. But I think maybe there was something about this pie, because you did see most people. I mean, Nancy was great at it. Adam was a big fan. You know, there's a few, but a lot of them struggled. And I just wonder maybe if this was one of the, like, because normally I think blueberry pie, it's not like really dry. It's going to be something that you can eat a lot. You're going to feel terrible after, but I feel like you could power through it and get done. And Leanne and Mar, I mean, they were smart, I guess, to use the express pass early, but, and Todd and Anna too, both of them, I don't know. I mean, maybe they would have eventually finished, but without the express pass, are those teams just take the penalty? Are we in that situation? Because it'd only be 2 hours. So maybe that's what they would have done.
I guess, but unless somebody really tried to meat block it, there's really no upside to taking that penalty either.
Well, especially they didn't know this, but I guess after that you did the ferry doors. But then if you take a 2 hour penalty, I guess that means they get to the ferry terminal. But I bet you most of these teams all checked in within 2 hours of each other. I don't think there was a huge gap. I mean, we won't see until next week, but it didn't seem like there could be that much difference. Maybe the car racing, because it took so long, might have spread everybody out more. But a lot of the teams checked in pretty closely. So my question is, when they put this kind of task in the show right after the episode with the express passes, do you think the Amazing Race Canada is looking at this going, people are going to use the express pass here? Or was it just I don't know why they would want that to happen, but is this a kind of task that they almost predict someone's going to use one on?
I can't imagine that they looked at this task as being really difficult compared to the other ones. I mean, it does use a different set of skills compared to a lot of the really, you know, we talk a lot about the different buckets of tasks that there are. Like, you have the do the choreographed steps, and you have the kind of solve a puzzle, find an object, and then you've got the ones that are all brute force. But this one is kind of it's an outlier, I guess I would say. So maybe they did, and maybe they thought, well, just to make sure it stays competitive, we'll throw three express passes at people before they get to this point. But this really doesn't feel to me to be something so insurmountable they thought that somebody was definitely going to use one. So I don't think that's necessarily it. But I do think it wasn't out of the realm of possibility. I think production thought, yeah, we'll probably end up losing one express pass here. I don't think anybody thought they were going to lose all three of them in pie-related incidents.
Which is still kind of crazy to me. After last week, teams come out of it and you're like, oh, these teams have a leg up. And they're like, no. We want to give our extra advantage away so that we're good. Yeah, because personally, I look at the pie, and even if it's painful, and even if worst case you have to throw up, like pull a Martina or something or others. But I think of that as not a skill-based task. I mean, I know others may differ. But to me, if I'm using an express pass, I'm using it on that knot. Because if I saw that knot and I had an express pass, I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to be there all year. I'm never going to tie that thing in the amount of time. And that's a little bit more skill. It's not the hardest thing. But I agree that it seems like, granted, no one had it at that point, so it didn't matter. But it does seem like that's a type of task that maybe you would use it more.
Yeah, it seems like it. Of course, by that point, we were all out of express passes. But I want to talk about, like, individually, but were these good decisions or not? And I would submit that I kind of get where two of the three express pass teams were coming from. But Todd and Anna was the one that felt like an outlier to me because they're the first ones to drop their express pass. And the only reason they give when they do it is that they want to maintain their lead and stay in first place. At this point, nobody has left the task yet. They could comfortably be there for a while and eat their pie and be on their merry way. There's no reason, apart from wanting to get another trip at the end of the leg, that you really have to be so attached to first place. And I've seen teams have that hubris of wanting to be in first place all the time, and it's been their undoing, because this is really not the important thing on The Amazing Race. The only leg you need to be in first place in is the last one. And teams that get too caught up in this, I want to win every leg, it tends not to go well for them.
Yeah, I agree, especially with them, because they finished, you know, they've been in third and then first, and now they finished second. But I do, there was a couple of quotes they said, like, this won't be our last first place, and we're, and I understand that. I mean, because you come in, that team comes in, and they see, like, you know, some really strong people or athletes or whatever, and they probably, they finish first, and they do have a bit of a chip on their shoulder, like, okay, we proved we can be with them, we want to keep proving it. Where really, they didn't even try, because Leanne and Mar gave a good shot to the pie, I think. But Todd and Anna really a little bit. And I understand maybe that would have been bad for them, but they probably still make that ferry. And really, they didn't know this. So I know that's a bit results based, but it didn't solve much. And what happens when next week if they get U-turned or someone gets U-turned? And this could come up for any of them, but It's you're putting yourself in a position where so far they've been able to handle any task that's come up, but they were very quick to do it. And I think that is the difference between them and Leanne and Mar, who seemed to give it a real push and then realized we're falling behind. We can't get behind.
Yeah, 100%. They're good racers. They didn't need this boost at this exact point. I mean, okay, so what? You don't get a free trip to Boston.
Which always makes me laugh when they get trips to the U.S. on the Amazing Race Canada. I don't know why. I know it's exciting for them, but it's not like, you know, you get like, they're like, we're going to Paris or Tokyo, and now you're going to Boston. Yeah. So, I mean, exciting for Taylor and Courtney, who I feel like don't get mentioned much at all because they just kind of like are very steady. But they got, I thought it was cool for them. But yeah, I don't know. It's like Todd and Anna, we'll see what happens. They've proven they're very good racers. But there are other teams that have also proven they're very good racers. And now the slight edge they gained last week is now gone. So we'll see.
Yeah, it didn't seem like the juice was worth the squeeze in that instance. But yeah, okay, we've talked about Leanne and Mar a little bit. And now, I mean, I don't want to skip ahead because there's so much more to dissect in this blueberry pie discussion. But while we're on the subject of express passes, I feel like Nancy and Melissa were accidentally very savvy with their express pass.
It's hard to know because, yeah, when they did it, I was like, really, guys, really? Because all they did was find the door. Now, it's a tricky thing because they can look at it and be like, well, we got to the ferry on time. That's great. But they used it on a task that probably would have only taken a short time. I mean, maybe I'm wrong.
That did not look hard.
15 minutes. I don't know. How far were they walking? A few teams got confused and tried to you know, open the door and talk to it. And there's some things there. But yeah, it did seem like you want to use it on something more. I just think they were so flustered because Melissa, you know, was really struggling. I think Nancy ate about a pie and a half. But so I think by that point, they were just, when you're a team that's been in the front most of the whole time, you saw that look in their eye, the whole leg that looked like, oh, no. Oh, no, we're in trouble, you know, and they even when they got again, they fell behind. They had that same look and they could totally recover. And actually, it might benefit them with the U-turn coming up. But even if you're results based, sure, it was a good move. But taking that out of the picture, was it really smart to use it?
It was not. The only reason, like, again, it's kind of accidentally brilliant, because how would they have any idea that the very next thing they'd have to do would be catch a ferry that they almost certainly would have missed if they'd bled any extra time on that ferry door task? Usually they had no way of knowing that, but it turned out, like you said, results oriented. It turns out to be a very good move. But in a vacuum, it's not. In a vacuum, this was not a hard task, and they shouldn't have gotten so out of sorts about being behind, because there was a lot of leg left. And in 9 legs out of 10, you're able to make that kind of thing up.
Yeah. And part of it, though, too, where they lucked out is this leg didn't give them as much of a chance, because there was some flipping around from getting off the ferry to actually getting to the racetrack, because like Joseph and Akash were not first to the racetrack. There was a lot of flipping, but it wasn't completely that way. It did seem like being last also still, or second, you know, got them to a point where they were behind there, too, and lucked out a bit. But it still seems bad. And it makes me wonder, though, the way that they handled adversity. Yes, they ended up making it, but they kind of got that deer in the headlights look, which you don't normally see on teams that end up winning the race or doing really well. Like, we never saw that last season, you know, with the team that won. Everybody has a bad leg. So it'll be interesting to see how they recover next week, especially going out of the country.
Yeah, I mean, out of the country is such an equalizer for everybody. Like, it shows you if you're good at racing or not. So I don't think we can really make any predictions until we see people out in the field in Indonesia. But anyway, back to the pie.
Yes.
Because we've got so much we need to talk about. And again, we saw people this week have to eat a large amount of blueberry pie. Then they had to go on an elevated railway bridge. And if next week they have to go look at a dead body and fight Canadian icon Kiefer Sutherland, I'm going to officially have to start calling this the Stand By Me season.
I didn't even think about that with the railway bridge, because that is very familiar, actually. And you even mentioned in the intro, and I just blew past me. I was like, well, I didn't really get that. But yes, I'm not hoping for that to be next week's challenge, because then I would get a little concerned. But there's probably some other connection they can make that we, and you know, the next question will be, of course, then the final task at the end will all be about all the connections to Stand By Me.
Yes, the famous Canadian movie Stand By Me. The movie's not Canadian. They do have to handle leeches next week. So there's your connection right there.
This is really interesting. Somebody's feeling really smart throwing all this stuff in there. I like it, though. It's entertaining. So I'm still amazed by this task and all the puking. And I know, I mean, just when they got the, like, Phil got the bucket, and I was like, oh, well, that's odd. And then he starts throwing up. And then we can't talk anymore without talking about whatever sound. It felt like they were Foley sounds that Martine was making, but I don't think they were. I think they were real sounds. Where and then I love the way she handled it and laughed about it, because, you know, that was amazing. And I mean, not amazing in the typical Amazing Race definition of amazing, but oh my goodness, that was that had to make it also more fun for the other people who already felt sick to be hearing those wonderful sounds.
Yeah, I mean, she really sounds like a velociraptor when she throws up. And as much as I have to imagine that the sound guys at least kind of tweaked the volume on that, it was pretty amazing. And it also seemed like I thought she was doing okay until Phil brought the bucket over and he had a little barfing. And then he's like, hey, it's your turn, Martina. And I thought she was going to make it all the way through. And it turned out, like, the second it was suggested to her, she just started laughing so hard at the prospect. I feel like that kind of kicked it all off.
Yeah, she did call it the best day of her life. So I'm sure that was serious. There was no sarcasm there. But that was, it's just pretty endearing. She is something else. She's coming. She's been as advertised from the previews or from the premiere and everything. She's a lot of fun, and not in the typical way that you'll see a racer be fun. I mean, she's dry heaving on the side of the road and somehow still is just like enjoying it. I don't know if that's the right word, but there's fun to it. Like, I can't believe I'm doing all this crazy stuff.
I feel like she could hang with Floyd and Becca.
Yeah, she's definitely in the team fun mold where even, I mean, she had that moment in the premiere when she was climbing and having an issue, but you know, she's enjoying it. I'm appreciating each leg we get with them. Not that, obviously they have not finished super close to the back. They tend to seem like they're in trouble and then all of a sudden they're at the pit stop basically. So that may continue because they do have a good attitude about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's Lucy and Amelia upside yet again. You know, they're not the best team out there on the field, and nobody would have picked them to win at all, but they could be one of those teams that ends up going very, very far just because other teams are worse.
Yeah, and there's been teams like we saw it this week with Nancy and Melissa, and I'm sure some of the teams that have, you know, Taylor and Courtney, Todd and Anna, some of those teams are going to get overseas and just hit a wall, and Phil and Martina might be able to just drift right through, and we'll see. But they're a lot of fun. They're making this episode where, like you said, it wasn't as thrilling as some. That was one of the highlights, was Martina puking. Pretty much.
If that's their legacy, if they go out next week and all we got was Martina puking and that's what we remember of them, that will be enough. Dayenu.
Yeah, and this is different. You know, we've had a lot of, it seems like the Amazing Race Canada, you do always have teams that do some puke. Like they tend to like to show the puking, but it's usually for motion sickness or, like, you know, nerves, like we've seen, or, you know, anything. We really should have done the puke count back there in season 3, I guess, but we weren't that sophisticated yet. But in this case, they like to show it. A lot of people throwing up, you know, if that's what you like on TV, we saw it.
The other question I have about this task is, do you think it's made any more difficult if you have to do a speed bump where you have to taste a whole bunch of salt and then eat two pies?
Yeah, that was interesting. I mean, we blitz dried past it because the speed bump was so quick. And it probably partially was just that the show had a lot to get through. But it's almost like we could easily forget that happened. I don't know if it made it that much harder, because it seemed like Zainab was like the salt master or something. I mean, that was impressive, but I don't think it made much difference at all. But, you know, I put him behind a little bit, but that's one of these speed bumps. And we've seen kind of dumb speed bumps, but it did require some skill. And who knows, some other teams might have struggled.
Well, it looked to me like the task that sent Brenschel into a tailspin way back in the day, the fun and good task where they had to taste all the different food. And we've seen this before on Amazing Race Canada as well. I think this was the task that Rob and Ryan had to do 30 times, where they had to taste the different kinds of cheese. And this is in that mold, but it's a little bit easier, so it ended up being doable for them. And I kind of like that there's a puzzle element on the speed bump where you could get it wrong and potentially have to do it again. That, to me, is a little more exciting than stand around for a preordained amount of time handing out water to people or eat this ice cream cone, which I think we frequently reference as the platonic ideal of terrible speed bumps. So yeah, I didn't hate it. I'm not mad at it. And it seemed like they had a great week this week. They overcame their speed bump and overcame their kind of rough week last week and made up a lot of time. They're not going to be hammering out a win yet, but they're still in it.
Yeah, I mean, they finished seventh, which for them is good. And I agree with you about the speed bump. I mean, it's definitely more entertaining than watching somebody ride around in a spa car or something, or, you know, sit on an ice cube. You know, it's just, but it almost, because they were good at it, it was like nothing. And it's fairly rare, actually. I feel like a lot of times our speed bump will be like, shovel this stuff. Like, it's something where it's basically the equivalent of flipping an hourglass, where this, I don't think took long, but I think it was partially them. So maybe they have upside. Maybe they're finding their sea legs.
Oh,
I just thought of that. It's that's about the worst one I've ever made. But they basically are starting to do better. And I like their attitude. They're, especially after the non-elimination, I think this week they kind of took it like, not like, oh, we're nervous, which Joseph and Akash had a bit of that nervousness because they had been so close to the end. Where I didn't see that at all with Zainab and Monica. I felt like they were just enjoying it more and kind of just taking each task as it went.
they're very unflappable. And I guess I like that a lot about them. And I would say my one final point that I would like to draw attention to on this blueberry pie task that we've been discussing for half an hour. I want to talk about Courtney of Adam and Courtney barfing and then Adam thinking it's hilarious and then giving her a kiss with barf mouth anyway.
Those two are cute. I don't know. He's funny. I didn't think both of them are funny. Like, we talked about them kind of being goofy, but their relationship is funny. I don't know. They're not, even though they'll say babe and give the kisses and stuff, you can tell why they're together. They're a silly team. And I am glad to be surprised that they are not what I thought. And moments like that are perfect examples.
Yeah, they are not at all what I expected, and in the best possible way. I see immediately why they are here and why they are with each other. And that's really a lot of fun. So I hope that continues, even if they are on Team Dan.
Well, they are right now. This week, we're the number one team on Team Dan, which I'm going to ignore the standings and just rank them by how I only have three left. I mean, goodness gracious. And I'm afraid that here's what's coming, though. We've got the U-turn, and you know none of my teams are getting U-turned. So it's all going to be Team Jess with the U-turn. So I'm feeling good about this right now, the U-turn. But let's move on to roadblock number two. Oh, wait, no, I'm jumping ahead. Roadblock number one.
I think it is fair to jump over roadblock number one because I was wandering around all day today thinking about, like, I got to go back in my notes and see what I said about all these tasks. And I said, I know there were four tasks, and I know there was pie, and I know there were those weird doors, and I know they had the falcon, and they had the salt, and there was something else. There were two roadblocks. What was that second roadblock? It took me like half an hour to remember, and for some reason, was not looking it up, but it took me forever to remember that this was even a thing because it was so forgettable and so pointless.
I hate it when they drive cars. I know that they can play the rock and roll guitar music and they go, darn, and everybody goes, ooh, a Corvette. And it's like, great, you know, Chevy, you're awesome. The Corvette's gorgeous. But they do this every season. And it's like, this one at least it wasn't just ride in a car. They've gotten better with these. But really, there's only two notable things for this for me. One is that Courtney missed, which they were up there, drove 92, like was way over. And the other one is Joseph getting the dodo music as he drives really, really slowly around the track, which I enjoyed. That's about it. Am I missing anything else there?
No, there was nothing else. There was no there. It was just like we just went in circles for a while, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I mean, I felt bad for Adam and Courtney because I was like, really, if this is going to be what's going to cost him. But because as everyone finished, I mean, Joseph finished with like less than a second. So a lot of them were really close. But again, it's kind of like, OK, they almost finished. OK, well, that's great. It's kind of what I was talking about when I mentioned in the premiere that with the U.S. version, how sometimes they just spend too much time showing the task happen over and over. This wasn't as bad as I've seen. But still, it's one of those things where you almost just want to be like, just put them in order and move on. You know, besides what happened with Adam and Courtney, I know they can't do that. This is a task that is more exciting to do than to watch by a long way.
It's not great. I guess I see why it's there. And I think, like you said, it also makes for really bad leg design because you can only have one team out there at a time doing the task. And so everybody ends up single file. It spaces people out quite a bit. And you can get away with a couple of these thrilling type tasks where everybody can only go once before they have to go back to the back of the line. But we've had one every leg so far, and two of the three were not remotely thrilling.
Yeah. And it's like, it's bad enough that I can't even remember what one was last week because poker. I was thinking, oh, that's
right.
Because,
blackjack. Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking of week one with the beaver with, you know, Chewy missing and falling to the back. But yeah, very similar thing. You want to have a situation where there's a lot happening. You always want to have a chance of a lot of movement. And when you have something that seemed to be designed, again, by the fact that almost everyone got it, I almost feel like it was designed where they expected pretty much everyone to get it. So in that situation, then it's just like, there's not much excitement. Oh, I mean, I guess, you know, we're only three legs in. If beyond the Team Dan thing, I am not so locked into these teams to be like, oh, I can't believe that Phil got it or whatever. You know, I mean, that might be a bad example because I would like them to do well. But you know what I mean? It's not so much like, and we're so, there's so many teams. It just seems to be like, okay, we got to do something for our sponsor and we can show some cars driving on a racetrack. But it, you know, luckily it wasn't. It wasn't like some where you see where there's only two legs in a task. We had four legs or four tasks in a leg, if I can say that correctly. But yeah, it was okay. But really, it seemed to really benefit the teams that got there early and probably were only there a few minutes ahead of the teams that were at the very back.
And I mean, again, I want to give my heartfelt thanks to Chevrolet for making this show possible with their generous sponsorship. And I guess if the trade-off to having a show in the first place is that every so often we have to pay lip service to our Chevrolet overlords, I'm okay with it. But other than that, there was nothing redeeming about this task, and I would have been totally fine if we hadn't seen any of it.
Yeah, I mean, because we already had, you know, they had the Chevy Volt that was there, and I always like to see those, so it's not all the big trucks. But the second, you know, and I don't, my issue with this is not the fact that it was a sponsorship task. I'm okay if you put something in, you know, you heard me raving about the Woods judge last week. So it's okay when there's things that are sponsored, just make the tasks interesting. But I guess we should move on to roadblock number two, now that I've actually said it correctly.
Well, roadblock number two at least was interesting.
Yes, it was. It was, and it also had a wonderful five hole, which we haven't seen too much of lately. So that was good.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love a good five hole? But does this really fall into the five hole bucket?
I think so. And part of the five hole thing is when someone says something like, "This task is for me. This is something I do all the time." And that's what we got with Melissa, where basically she said, "This is the exact knot that I make all the time." And then it took her like 30 tries. So even though they didn't get eliminated, and they already were behind. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't like they were first and ended up eighth. They came in, I believe, in eighth when they got to the task. But it felt like it. Granted, the show didn't really hype it too much. I think it qualifies. But again, I may be stretching because we haven't had too many recently.
I would call it a five hole if they had to barrel race. I think it's five hole adjacent. I'm not prepared to call it a five hole.
Yeah, it might also be too. If she hadn't said anything, I would never call it. So again, it's not like it's her job. So that is a good point. It was more just because she was so pumped to do it. And then unfortunately, like when, you know, I guess this is more in line with like when Adam said that the camping tent test was like made for his life. And then, but they didn't also win that either. So this is more in the racer hubris category, I guess, than five hole.
Yep. And five hole is its own special kind of racer hubris. But yeah, I would call this more basic hubris than anything else. But yeah, it was fun to have animals involved, and these were very well-trained animals. You didn't have anybody really having a struggle with like a lot of flapping or pecking, and nobody got bitten. But it kind of took this very basic thing that nobody would ever do unless they were into falconry and tie a knot one-handed. That's not something people sit around thinking, oh, I wonder if this is something I can do, unless you're into it. And it made a whole task around it. It made kind of a theatrical thing. And I was happy to see the animals involved. I think it really did end up separating the good racers, the people that could pay close attention and master a task, from the people that maybe overestimated their own abilities.
Yeah, and that is a case where you want to see tasks. Like, it's the opposite almost of the car racing, which did have some skill, but most could do. Where this is one that I, like I mentioned it earlier, I look at, and sure, I can tie a knot with my shoes, but one-handed? No. And one-handed with a specific thing? No. This is one where I really felt for Akash because I looked like he looked confused, like just, and I would have, and even him walking down and telling Joseph, I can't do this. Well, granted, you know, this might not be the task that I would see that happen. It would happen with me. So seeing some people come in and really nail it, I like tests where, especially when all the teams are close, where someone can step forward and all of a sudden Taylor and Courtney win the leg. I like stuff like that. And Phil and Martina finished fourth. I mean, it's just fun to see that versus something where teams arrive, they mostly stay in the same spot and they leave. Because on the flip side, Joseph and Akash did not arrive last and ended up getting eliminated. So the task was important and made a difference in what happened.
Yeah, I think it also specifically tests a type of skill that you may not think like immediately. This is more than tying a knot. This is like, can you focus? Do you have manual dexterity? Can you keep yourself calm enough to learn how to do a new skill and pick it up quickly? And I think these are all important things that you need to have if you're going to go on the Amazing Race to begin with. And so I did like that it tested all of these things in a new way.
Yeah. And for like, that's a good example, because the Melissa's problem was she kept finishing like way early and she was doing the wrong knot. So that came down to how, like you said, attention and focus. It wasn't that she was not capable of tying a knot with her one hand. It was that she was so flustered, like we mentioned earlier, that she didn't even pay attention close enough. And I'm not trying to pick on Melissa. I'm just saying that as an example of why this is good, because part of it is the dexterity, like you said. And I'm just going to repeat exactly what you said, because that's very exciting podcasting. But, you know, basically, her failures were not just because, like we mentioned, you know, she was arrogant. It was that she didn't pay attention to detail. And so having the dexterity and the attention to detail, I feel like that's a good task. So the leg finished well and the pit stop looked gorgeous. And unfortunately, I lost another team, but I don't know. There wasn't a lot of suspense for me. I did not. Once things started to go badly, I kind of had a feeling what was going to happen. Was there any surprise for you by how it finished?
They tried to make it exciting, but I think ultimately it probably was not that close.
Right. No. And also, one thing I should note, too, with the pit stop, to jump ahead a bit, is that they set that up well, where we did have a foot race for first place, which I didn't really care who got first, but it could have been interesting. We could have had a situation, I think the producers did this, where teams, because it was so long, we could have had a race for last in a different situation. So I like that they did that, where it could have been something that could have gotten very tense given how much far they had to run.
Yeah, and I think it makes for some great like cinematography excellence. Like just getting that long shot of people running down the bridge. And you also got the great shot of John saying, yelling my name doesn't make the mat any closer.
John, it's like a Phil move there.
Yeah. Just, he's sassy.
What's going on this season? But yeah, so basically looking at the leaderboard, we had Taylor and Courtney won, so another different, but you still had a lot of the same people up there. Leanna Marr, Todd and Anna, Dylan and Kwame, who always seem like they're about to fall short and then finish fifth again. So, but there's not, I mean, everything kind of happened. You look at the finish and you're like, it's kind of what we expected, besides Nancy and Melissa, which was the big change.
Yeah. And I think that was just down to them having one bad leg. And I, you know, later on in the race, you have that one bad leg, it could eliminate you. But I think as long as they made it through this one, they're going to be okay for a while. They're good racers and they seem to have some staying power.
Yeah, hopefully this, like I said with Monica and Taneb, that surviving, even though this wasn't where they were going to be eliminated, will make them next week, they're going to loosen up and go, okay, all right, we can do this. All right, so should we get to questions?
Yeah, before we get to questions, we should start what I think is going to be a recurring segment this season. Karen Eisenberg has very generously volunteered to keep track of the kiss count, although the way she kind of presented it to me, it felt more like, I can't believe you people can't keep an accurate count in your head. You're a mess. You need someone to do this for you. So I'm going to take it on. So thanks for taking it on, Karen. She has gone back and watched all the previous episodes so that we'll have an accurate kiss count going forward. And she went ahead and also did the babe count. And this is going to be a lot of fun. In episode one, she says the kiss count 6 and babe count 1. Plus, there were 2 pics of them kissing in their intro package and 1 episode of rubbing noses. But we're not going to keep track of the nose count. I think that just gets totally out of hand. Episode 2, the kiss count was 5 and the babe count was 14.
Oh my gosh. I had no idea.
I love this game already.
we're going to have to put our money down now for the babe count here, now that she's counting for us. But go on. So yeah. This week, how did it go? And then we can make our picks here based on that.
Yeah. So kiss count 2, babe count 5. So that means that up through episode 3, the kiss count is now 13 and the babe count is 20.
All right. So my kiss count guess was 33 and yours was 52. Is that right?
I think I was 53, but I'm 53. Not.
53.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Karen, can you go back and listen to the show now? okay. So, and I actually did count the kiss count is 2 this week, so I feel pretty good about actually being accurate. Though if I can't count to 2, there is a problem there. So, all right. So you said that the babe count is at 20. Is that what you said, right?
Babe count's 20.
So I'm gonna put mine in first, because then the last time you did first and I went. So I'm gonna say this is a tough one. I'm gonna say 56 for that one.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and I always take the over on these things. So I'm going to go ahead and say an even 70 on the babe count this season.
Yeah, well, the part of me is like, should I be that optimistic because they're on Team Dan? But we have seen a lot of them in the edit, so I feel like they're going to be around a while. I don't get the impression they're about to get eliminated.
Yeah, and I want to point out that my babe count is still like fully half of what I guessed the giver count was going to be.
Yes, you really overshot that one. I don't remember. I just know that I think that was a case where I think you said like 200 or I don't remember. It was something. It was not that high, but it was up there. So again, because I can't draft the right teams, I have to try and do it this way. And Karen, thank you for helping us out so I don't have to count everything as we go. And it'll make it more fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely fun to have a couple of prop bets while we go through this. So let's go ahead and get to our questions.
Well, great. Well, we got some good ones here. So I am going to start with what I think is an interesting question about the casting of this season, especially because I didn't even think about the fact. Well, I'll read the question, then I'll mention something here. So this is from Mike Bloom on Facebook. He mentions that at the beginning of season three, of course, had three male teams at the end. Season 1 and 2 winners were all men. So we mentioned season 4 that they may have purposely cast. They didn't cast that many. Cast fewer weaker male teams, considering that they had won the first 3 seasons. And now the first 2 eliminated teams this season are male. So there's only 1 left. Do you think, Jess, there's any chance the show may have done it again in response to how dominant Sam and Paul were last season? I have a thought on this, but I'm curious what you think.
I think that's a little bit overstating the issue. I do think that the show is tending to shy away from casting like really dominant alpha male teams. But we do have Dylan and Kwame. They are solid competitors. They're athletic. They seem smart. They seem personable. And I think that it is a total accident that the first 2 teams eliminated were male teams. I don't think that is any reflection on, like, I don't think they're the worst teams out of the bunch. Like, I don't think we had them pegged to go out first. I think that's just the way things shook out. While I think the show in general is moving away from casting teams that seem like they're going to Gino and Jesse their way all over the place, I don't think it's really, I don't think they're casting with a view to we have to have this particular gender makeup win the season. And if they are doing it, it's certainly not as overt as it was in season 4. So that's my thought. What's yours, Dan?
It's pretty similar because, I mean, season 3 was like the dude-ageddon or whatever. And I think that after that, they basically were like, I think they did make a conscious decision after that season. But I think they've just kind of, it's not as much this time. I just think they're trying to do a variety of teams. Because you look at it now, and yes, we have some very strong female teams, but we also have several couples that I think that have done well, or 3 couples, actually, if you count Adam and Courtney, that have done well. So I think they've just decided after season 3, we have to be careful, because I really think they thought Chewy and Happy might do better, because even though they were older, these guys, you know, flew jets. I don't think the show immediately assumes anyone will do great or poorly. But I doubt that most people had them pegged as the first team out, despite when they got drafted. So I think it's cool. I don't really like a situation where it's just all guys at the end. I like the fact that some of the female teams are so strong, but I'm kind of with you. I think they did it with 4, and now they've just kind of continued that trend, but not as extremely.
Yeah, I think that's fair. All right, so we got a lot of questions about the pie, of course. And Derek Hsu says, where do you rank the blueberry pies in the history of Amazing Race food challenges?
You know, I did not go back, I admit, to look at all the old challenges. So I would think I'd put it somewhere in the middle, because gross food challenges often cannot be that exciting, except for when you have a case maybe where someone's like a vegetarian and won't eat them or something interesting. But this is not to me on the level like we described, especially of season 6, because, you know, there were no musicians playing or anything, or season 7, because there was the strategy. I still feel like those two and then the season five caviar are like on the Mount Rushmore of food tests. And this kind of falls in the middle. It's just eating a pie on the surface isn't that epic. There wasn't that much to it. It's like we described, it's only even better just because of Martina and because team struggled. But am I not giving it enough credit?
Well, do you think production was maybe hoping that one person throwing up would like kick off everybody throwing up?
Maybe, you know, they did have those buckets nearby. I think they were planning something. You know, it's hard to say because there was a lot of it, but it wasn't like the situation. I mean, well, no one threw up into the pie. So that was something right there, you know, which would have been something. But it wasn't on the level. The volume was not the level of the meat, which was pretty cruel. But yeah. I think production hoped there'd be some of it, but I'm guessing they're pretty happy with what they got out of, especially with Martina.
Yeah, I think they got everything they had hoped for. We got many more great questions about the pie, but I'm going to go to Ruloville, who asked us via Twitter, in homage to the classic season 6 Hungarian spicy soup segment, very near and dear to my heart, what Canadian culturally appropriate music should they have had performing during the blueberry pie eating task?
Well, I will admit that I did look up Canadian bands to try and, you know, today, because my first thought was Sloan, but that doesn't really fit. It's only because I saw them at concert. So the two that I came up with, one, just because I feel like the one is the Arcade Fire, because I feel like they could wear some goofy outfits and, you know, and really kind of have the right style of music. The other one, which I enjoy more, is they could have Anvil play, because I feel like, you know, those guys, you could just put in like some loud, like sort of 80s metal-ish music and play that really loud while they're trying to eat a pie. Now, I know neither one really fits the farmer's market, but those are the two I came up with.
Yeah, Arcade Fire was the best I could come up with, but I like Anvil. I think that's a better answer.
Well, they're probably more likely they could get them too. I mean, you know, but yeah, I think they should have done something, but you really don't see too many acts like real, like, I mean, yes, they'll have celebrities and such, you know, Alex Trebek was here, but not really bands. But I love the question. And there's plenty of other Canadian artists that are very talented. So I'm not narrowing it down to that. It's more, I was trying to think of something that sort of fit with kind of the goofy theme of the show. All right. So let me find one here to ask you. See here, we've answered a lot of this already. Rasmus Ilya made a nice crack that, of course, the 3-4 way finish for last place was all Dan's teams, which, that's pretty true. So let's go back to the top. This interests me. I don't really agree, but I'm curious to your thoughts on this question. So James Ong on Twitter asked, so far, there's had 2 legs, 1 and 3, with 2 roadblocks each. Teams are forced to split them. So especially with the second roadblock, he says they're taking away one of the more interesting strategic elements of the race, how to optimize roadblocks between team members. So James asks, is there more dumbing down of the race to lead to closer finishes by doing this?
I don't know that it necessarily leads to closer finishes, but I don't mind it. I think it's one of those situations where as people develop a strategy and you get close to that optimal strategy for how we shake these roadblocks out and how we know things are going to go, once you kind of get to that peak roadblock strategy point, you have to shake up the structure of the race so that people don't just play it that way all the time. So it's similar to like Survivor throwing in the Mutiny Idol or, you know, throwing in the Fire Making Challenge at the Final Four. You're putting a new twist on it so that you don't know that that's how things are going to go and you can't be totally sure. And so it keeps you on your toes in that way. And so I don't mind it. I can see where he's coming from on that. I think that there's been much made of, well, we only get X number of roadblocks per person, and so we have to kind of think about who what. But I also like that when you have 2 roadblocks in an episode and the other person has to do another one, then you are just letting one person carry all the weight per leg. Both members of the team always have to do something on that leg. They always have to contribute. And I think in that way, it might end up making things a little more equal.
Yeah, I agree. And we saw that in leg one where Martina had to climb up that pole. Now, if there was just 1 roadblock, she's never going to be she's going to look at that pole and be like, yeah, right. If they can see it, there might be a case where they hadn't seen it yet. But in general, that happens. For me, like, especially him talking about dumbing down. I understand that basically if people don't want to see more detours because you see more tasks, that makes sense. But I agree that now, because we've had two roadblocks twice, teams, when they go to, let's say next week, the first task is a roadblock, teams in the back of their head are going to go, is there going to be another one? Do we have to think about that? They won't immediately. I mean, some of these teams are very balanced, but if you see something like, you know, Nancy and Melissa, where right now it seems like Nancy has been stronger in tasks, they may normally they would put her in something like that, maybe, especially if, because Melissa's a little down about how she did this time. They can't do that. So I like the anything really overall where they mix things up and you don't just have detour, roadblock, roadblock, detour over every week. Amazing Race Canada is good at that. And I feel like this is another way to do it.
Yeah, they're better than Amazing Race US. And I think we've talked about this a lot, where they throw in a lot of random other tasks, too. You don't know what the makeup of your leg is going to be. Like, you don't know if you're getting a detour, a roadblock, and a route marker. You're getting three route markers and a roadblock, two roadblocks, and a detour. Who knows? It could be anything. And I like that now you don't know. And now you have to think about things from a different angle now.
Yeah, and also the show likes it because you have people doing things they're not used to. So there's more drama possibly if someone is afraid of heights, ends up jumping off a plane or whatever. It's just it creates more uncertainty, and the show wants people to do things. And then when they overcome it, it's like, woo, they did it. They want more things like that, so it can be a better show.
Yeah, it's a lot like Amazing Race US frequently has those roadblocks where they ask who's doing the roadblock, and then it turns out that the other team member has to do the hard part of the roadblock. And it's basically all engineered to make Rachel Riley jump out of a plane.
Yeah, basically the other person's like, okay, you get to go ride in this nice car and go sit on the beach, and the other person has to jump and find you. It's tricky. I like that, because anything that kind of, I don't want them to be cruel, but it puts people off their game. It helps teams that are rolling to struggle, which is always good, especially when all my teams are struggling. So any other, I do want to mention that Kemper Boyd did call out this great moment when Martina spoke to the bird and yes, said, you know, I believe in you, you believe in me, and then immediately got the knot. I mean, Martina's TV gold. She's the star right now.
Yes. We got Chad Glass asks us, does it seem like the Raptors got progressively smaller as the task dragged on? At the end, they were barely holding a parakeet.
I did not notice that, but that is great, because if that's the case, it's kind of like when they like have to jump and they keep moving it closer. They were like with Akash, they were like, what else we got back here? We got anything? He's going to finish it. I don't know. I didn't notice that, but that would be really funny if that was the case.
Yeah, I didn't notice that they got progressively smaller. I did notice a huge size disparity, because they had one that was the size of like a pit bull, and then they had one that was like the size of a tennis ball.
Yeah, it was probably just like luck of the draw, maybe, or something. I mean, I don't know. Like, maybe they're just all different sizes and it just kind of happened to be what you would get.
Yeah, either that or maybe they all had different pros and cons. Like, maybe the big one was a little more docile and then the little one was mean.
It might be the case, but that's funny. I'm glad that he caught that.
Yeah. So I think that about does it for our questions, Dan. Is there anything else you wanted to bring up that we got on the social media this week?
Well, I did want to give a thanks. We received, this happened last season too, a very nice comment from Julian Lowell, who are one of our favorite all-time teams. And they just said a nice thing. And they also enjoyed the fact that when I was talking about how, I think it was when I was talking in the preview about Adam and Courtney, actually, and said, well, you know, they, who knows, they might not be boring. We thought Julian Lowell might be boring, and they ended up being really funny. And actually, that's true. So I wouldn't make the teams be very similar, but I just thought that was entertaining. And I just want to say thanks to Julian Lowell for the really nice note, too. But it shows we are often wrong during those previews.
It's very true. And I, like I say, nothing makes me happier than being completely wrong about what a team is going to be.
Yes, because if we're right all the time, it's boring. You know, if we pick a team to, and we have been, we pick a team to win and they win. Okay. I guess we're smart. Yeah. But no, we want things to be crazy. We want it to be fun. So, and it's been that way so far. I'm looking forward to them getting out of Canada for a little while.
Yes, me too. So I want to thank everybody for all of your great questions. And we love, love, love hearing feedback from you. So you can always feel free as you are watching the episode every week. You know that Dan and I are not Canadian, so we end up having to watch the show on a little bit of a delay. But don't worry about spoiling us. If you're watching it in real time, just feel free to throw the questions at us. We'll catch up at some later point. So the best way to get questions to us is probably through Twitter. You can tweet at me at Haymaker Hattie.
And I am at the Dan Heaton. And thanks everybody once again for the great questions.
Yeah, we love hearing from you. Another way that you can get engaged with us is to leave a comment on robswebsite.com. Find the page for this episode and leave us a comment there. We appreciate it there. And you can also become a patron of Rob Has a Podcast. And people that contribute at the $10 level and above get access to an exclusive Facebook group where you can connect with fellow fans. And there's lots of meetups. There's lots of discussion of reality TV and other stuff. And every week we post a question thread in there. We get some great feedback from there as well. So we highly encourage you to become a patron. The other big perk about being a member of the patron Facebook group is that whenever people track down links or other ways to watch Amazing Race Canada for non-Canadians, they all get posted in that group. And that's a great way to find that stuff. So with all that in mind, I guess we are going to wrap things up here, and we'll see you next week for the first foray out of Canada. And we're very excited for that. So everybody avoid eating too much pie, and we'll see you next week.